pride.
Yeah.
That is discrimination. Now, the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario has issued, they've ordered the City of Emo to pay Borderlands Pride and the other parties $15,000, $10,000 of which is payable by the township, mm-hmm. and a further $5,000 is payable by Mayor McQuaker personally. But yeah, it is, it's a big win. I think what's frustrating to Borderlands Pride, because they don't get legal payments, so under the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario, and I don't know if it's the same in other tribunals in other provinces, but you don't get your legal fees covered as part of a decision. The tribunal isn't empowered to say, you lost the case, pay the other side's legal fees. So mm-hmm. Borderlands Pride will have to foot the bill for all of their legal work on this, regardless of winning it. But they've told the press, they told the CBC that they were in it for the issue, not the money. Mm. The fact that they were discriminated against based on sexual orientation. Will this serve as a warning? Probably not. I do want to mention that one thing the court can do is make you attend mandatory Human Rights 101 training. Now, évidemment, the mayor of Emo probably is a short list of people that really does need to have some training on this. And hopefully they will be marginally better people having undergone the training. The training is not provided by mm-hmm. some third party. It's provided by the Human Rights Tribunal themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that. You groaned loudly, which is fine, but I've been
through those training sessions. All you have to do is point your eyeballs at them, pretend to be awake, and then fill out the form in the way that you assume they would want you to fill it out when you're done, and then they stamp it, and they say, not racist, and then you go home, but and then, like,
I will be a cheerleader here for this. If you're telling me that the judicial, quasi-judicial body that decides what is and isn't racial discrimination, for example,
yeah.
tells you, here is the line, you cross it, it's discrimination,
yeah.
and you could face a fine, you could yeah. face a this, that. That is very valuable information to know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? Well, we will be jumping to our second track of the day. And this one is Tying Tiny Knots. This is by the Crickets. And we will be back just after this.
Tying tiny knots, and I must have forgot a loose knot. It's easier to pull you through.
Sure.
Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Recently, it was what's known in the biz, or in the community, as TDOR. It is the Trans Day of Remembrance, or it was.
Yes.
Time of recording is after the fact. Mm-hmm. It is November 20th, I believe. Mm-hmm. Usually there are things happening in communities all over Canada for TDOR, Trans Day of Remembrance. It is a very somber event. We've been to a couple. We've interviewed folks to get a sense of how the past year has impacted them. Mm-hmm. The last time I saw my arch nemesis was at a Trans Day of Remembrance. I only have one or two arch nemeses.
Yes.
She said to me, "You're fat. I hope you'll die." And I said, I can't remember what I said. I was rather taken aback. She is my arch nemesis, after all. So
I think you're her nemesis.
I think so too. I think we're mutual nemeses.
Well, no, I don't think she's yours, because a true nemesis relationship, at least in the mythology, it's like you hate somebody so much that they complete you.
Oh. No.
Like, if your nemesis dies, you lose meaning in life.
I would not lose any meaning in my life once this woman passes.
Yeah.
I will not lose a moment of thought for her passing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, digressed into ranting about my nemesis. It doesn't happen often. But I do have, maybe a nemesis is not the right word then.
Yeah.
I need to find a softer word for my name. But if I have two, and she's one of them. Trans Day of Remembrance is a somber event. We didn't go and interview people this time. It just was not necessarily as appropriate. But I want to talk about transgender Europe and Central Asia.
Okay.
A few years ago, they started tracking, I think it's about 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
they started tracking incidents of where trans people have been murdered.
Yes.
Specifically murdered.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth noting that hate crimes against trans people are going way up.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give our audience a bit of an idea, about 1 in 100 people is trans, give or take an inch. You know what I mean? Like, it's genuinely not that many people. Yet, the crimes against them are far out of sync, way more likely to be victims of crime, way more likely to be brutalized compared to people who aren't trans. You know, if you're attacked, they're far less likely to get up again after it. It is horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Transgenders Europe and Central Asia started to track the data, and they found that in 2023, for example, they recorded across the whole globe about 321 cases of the murder of a trans person. Now, in 2024, it was 350 people that have been murdered. We choose not to report each week on trans murders. And that decision is made because, frankly, there is not a week that goes by without a story out of the US in particular of a trans person who has been brutally murdered. Not great.
There is a sort of a political complication to it as well. And it's one of those, like, it sounds like I'm going to be speaking against it, but I'm really not. And that is that on your average year, when they do the list of trans folks who died that year from violence, something like, on most years, about 3/4 of them was intimate partner violence. It was not due to transphobia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not me saying the list isn't worth reading. Because there have been times, like, I actually remember the time where you last met your nemesis. And the reader presented the list as if it was all murders due to transphobia. And not due to negative interactions with drug crime or intimate partner violence.
Or shingles.
And the issue is, it's not all due to transphobia, but it's still a tragic death, and it's supposed to be remembering the suffering that trans people go through. Yes, some of it's the kind of suffering that literally anyone could go through. Like, a lot of demographic groups suffer, you know, death in a intimate partner violence situation. It's not just about specifically highlighting transphobia, although I have seen people do that, but it's really just about highlighting the suffering in the community. And I wish people would be a little bit more honest about that, because some people misreport it as being just lies, and it's not lies. It's just they're framing it. They're doing a poor job in framing it.
Yeah.
But these deaths are tragic either way. Mm-hmm. And that is what is being highlighted. In a lot of these cases in Europe and Central Asia, they tend to underreport trans folks who die in the prison system. Well, which sometimes is due to transphobia, and I think it's kind of this weird oversight. But there is this movement of trying to record people and their suffering in Europe and the Middle East. I do think it's positive, but I also think you need to be very careful about how you frame it, so that you're not overinflating something.
So let's zero in for a moment. One name that isn't on this list, because it was very recently, was Kanisha Chantal in Chicago, mm-hmm. Signed up for nursing school, was described as fun, radiant, was a drag queen, performed in bars, and was recently brutally murdered. Mm-hmm. Was the 30th trans person in the US to be killed this year so far. Mm-hmm. But they did find that a significant number of them, 93% of the trans victims who were killed, mm-hmm. 93% mm-hmm. worldwide, were Black, trans, or trans people of color. Now, I do want to make a note that when we're talking about worldwide, a lot of the world
doesn't report.
More specifically, a lot of the world is not white. There is, when we're looking at the entire global population, just China and India alone, you know, it's so this number is shocking. 93% is absurdly high.
Yeah.
And it does beg the question of how it is so much lower and disproportionate. Like I mentioned earlier about when I zeroed in on this one example, Commissioner Coco Chantal is a Black woman.
Okay.
A Black trans woman, you know. So in the States, it's horrific. We couldn't go a year without mentioning it. I would not want that job over at Transgender Europe and Central Asia, mm-hmm. Keeping track of people who have been murdered and the only thing about them that is in common is their trans identity.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrific. You mentioned about the prison system, 46% were transgender sex workers who had been murdered. I would be curious to look into the rates between sex work and transness and so on and so forth and get a bunch of that information.
I mean, this is another instance of being careful about how you report things, because I don't think that, you know, a trans sex worker in Afghanistan was murdered because they're not white. Like, there's I don't know, you got to be very careful about how you phrase these things and make sure that you get the context right.
Exactly. It would also be remiss of us to not mention that the ILGA World Conference was this past month as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it was the ILGA, just for those who aren't familiar, it's the International Lesbians and Gays Association, I think is what they stand for. It is a global queer organization, mm-hmm. essentially. It is made up of hundreds of member organizations in Canada. That includes Fierté Canada Pride, it includes Toronto Pride, Vancouver Pride, Ottawa Pride, all the prides. Maybe not all the prides, we have like 100 of them in this country, but most of the prides.
Yeah.
EGAL Canada, huge queer organization. Mm-hmm. Some of the newer ones like Queer Momentum, I believe, are also members. So in all of the countries where they have queer organizations send delegates. I think there are And there's delegates for North America, and so on. But anyway, 1,450 people attended the conference in Cape Town this year. And it's encouraging. It's the biggest it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we couldn't go without mentioning it, especially in a climate where so many countries are still using queer folks and trans folks as a punching bag or as a thin excuse for authoritarianism, which is my segue
that,
into Russia.
An uncommonly good segue.
Thank you. Yeah.
So there's been reports coming out of Russia recently that their anti-propaganda laws about the community, that you cannot openly discuss LGBT rights issues in Russia, that this law...
It's a no-say-gay law.
Yeah. A little bit more than that, but yeah, that's what it's kind of nicknamed as. It turns out that it's a little bit complicated because Russian internal police forces are using it as an excuse to shut down other non-LGBT events. So there are reports of a cosplay festival, like a Comic-Con, that was shut.
We reported that at the time. They were like, oh, the furries are all gay. And it wasn't furries.
Oh, no, there was a Comic-Con event and a separate furry.
We talked about the furries. Event.
There was the big one for me that really set off alarm bells of like, oh, I see what they're doing here. There was a meeting of...
Libertarians.
And libertarianism is basically the spiritual opposite of communism. And I don't even think it was a political party of any variety. I think it was just more the sort of like philosophical or economic, like a discussion
group. The school of thought.
It was a discussion group for libertarianism. There was there's a thing in here about board game group that got together that was shut down for some reason for LGBT propaganda. And they're having troubles tracking numbers, but it does seem to be that about half of the cases of them shutting down venues, sometimes permanently shutting down venues for hosting these events, is not related to anything to do with LGBT, even though they're using that as the motivation for shutting it down. So it looks like what they're doing is they passed this law because they knew that the Eastern Orthodox Church and the various Russian oligarchs would be in support of this law. And they're using this law as a backdoor to sort of enforce other silencing techniques within Russia. So there is this kind of prop where they're using the broader Russian... Well, I mean, I don't want to say the broader Russian disdain, because every time I've seen... It's hard to find opinion pieces from Russia. The fact that I found this is kind of shocking. But it's hard to survey the population. When they do, it turns out that like something like 60% of Russians are anti-gay rights, but that leaves 40% who are like, I really don't care.
I would wonder of that 60%, you know, they're getting a daily diet of controlled media by the Russian government.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the talking point is anti-gay.
The other thing you have to bear in mind is usually when they do surveys and when they're reporting on surveys, they lump categories together. Mm-hmm. So strongly never pass those laws in my country. Some of the laws are fine. Some of the laws are not. I kind of don't care, but I guess I'm against it. Those three categories get lumped together as being anti. And you've got that strip down the middle where they're like, I don't care how they live their lives. I just don't necessarily think they should get legal protections, which is not ideal, but it's better than throwing them all in prison.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is this trend of like, when you lump things together like that, it's really hard to kind of bore down into what the opinion is. But a lot of Russians kind of don't care. They're just tired of being poor and oppressed. It's kind of a, well, I mean, the Russian economy is doing really well, but only for certain people.
Yeah, in the military?
Well, in the military, but also if you happen to live in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and not Tbilisi, that's the capital of Georgia. There's a third city that's doing incredibly well.
St. Petersburg?
That's one of the two that I already listed.
Oh, did you? Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. Grovnovsky? I can't remember. But anyway,
Minsk?
No, that's in Belarus.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Eastern European. I'm sorry. Wow, I am letting the side down. I got Brunei and Burundi mixed up earlier as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The shame.
So it is kind of... just when they said they went after the libertarian group and said that it broke the anti-LGBT propaganda laws, I that was the big red flag for me, that this is being used for something more.
It's a loincloth.
Yeah.
For... when you create the legal cover that is so vague, it becomes a tool that's very easy to use.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing in Russia.
I think, like, this is something that's been existing in English common law for a long time, is that mere suspicion is enough to warrant an investigation. but it's not enough to warrant an arrest. And it's not even enough to warrant, like, 50 people knocking on your door with guns on their hands. It's enough to have, like, one person and maybe backup in the car just in case you're hostile. Just knocking on your door, tuck, 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 I have a few questions for you, it'll only take 10 minutes. I think it's 100% fair. Mere suspicion is enough for that. It's basically, do you have enough suspicion to merit taking up half an hour of your day, which could be, you know, used to solve crimes that are known to be crimes, as opposed to this, which might be. So you don't want to overextend, but you also, investigations are important. I don't know. You know what I'm saying. But yeah, no, the mere suspicion and then you shut the whole thing down, I think that's a bit much.
Yeah. We need to be critical of laws that go against our inalienable rights.
Yes.
The right to free speech, the right to expression.
Association.
So exactly. Yeah. There was also an op-ed this week in the, I think it was the Toronto Star, and it was from a member of the legal team in the court case against the province of Alberta.
Okay.
About workplace discrimination. Now, Alberta did not have sexual orientation in its protections. That was what the court. I forget the name. Viand. I forget the name of the exact court case.
Okay.
Anyway, but he was saying, like, look, you know, we were fighting that fight, and now we're not necessarily stepping up for freedom of expression and identity in the same way when we're talking about trans youth.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to have parked them aside. Anyway, we have run out of time. I did want to mention, we are aware of Alan Jones, the conservative broadcaster in Australia, his recent arrest, the 26 offences in and counting, I believe. This is on top of the historical cases that came up before. There were a number of other stories that we didn't get around to as
Jimmy
well.
Jimmy Savile thing? Like...
Jim, that was the name I was trying to remember. Jimmy Savile.
Okay.
You mentioned Kevin Spacey, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's fair. Like, I think the cultural impact in Australia is sort of Kevin Spacey level. You know? That's what I was trying to tell you, like, in terms of, like, cultural relevance.
Yeah, also Epstein and now P. Diddy of just, like...
Yeah, yeah. Or Jimmy Savile for the Brits Among Us.
Everyone who is even tangentially friendly with them is now under suspicion of knowing something in hiding.
There's a Rolodex of Australian billionaires who were like, yeah, he's a friend of mine. And they're like, I've never met this man in my life. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Websites have been scrubbed. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I did also want to mention some really interesting news out of China. We don't have a lot of time, but there's enough time to tell you this.
Okay.
There was a lady who sued government for... There's a grey area where shock treatment... So homosexuality is no longer a medical disease in China.
As of last week?
Yeah. No, it's not been the case for a while.
Okay.
But there is discordant sexual orientation. It's where maybe it's not quite... The fit's not quite right. Whatever. But that's discordant sexual orientation. Being gay itself is not a disease.
I can think of a dozen people where I would describe them as having a discordant sexual orientation.
Well, this lady was subjected to 7 electroshock sessions over the course of 97 days.
Non-voluntary.
Definitely not voluntary interactions. So Ling is her name, and she sued the government and now has been paid by about 60,000 yuan for this. Now, it's a bit of a legal grey zone, took him to court, has won for it. Seems like a small case, but could really move the needle China.
It's absolutely a huge deal, because the prosecutors, the defense, and the judges are all members of the party.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they're willing to let somebody sue them on this, that's actually a very big deal. Even if it's a small case with a small payout, the fact that they acknowledge that they did something wrong in the context of China, it's a huge deal. It's huge.
All right. Well, we have run out of time. We'll be covering some more international news next week, and we will be playing out with our last track of the day. This is Madison. This is Evergreen by Madison. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
nothing ever lasts. I'm on this road without a map, and I don't know when I'm coming home. On the run all the time, so much on my mind. As tall as a tree, never wavering, I'll always be. If you'd let me be your
nice. It's 5 o'clock now.